Welcome to Eno's Living Legacies Limited Edition podcast series. This podcast is part of our centennial celebration, marking 100 years of legacy, innovation, and impact for the Eno Center for Transportation. Founded by William P. Eno in 1921, from our inception, we focused on bringing the brightest minds in transportation together and building the capacity of the transportation industry through our education and training programs. Through this oral history project and podcast, we highlight some of those who have been part of Eno through the years. From board members to alumni to staff members, each participant reflects on Eno's history and impact through the years. Enjoy your listen.
My name is Tyler Duvall, and I'm here with Mary Peters. Couldn't have a better person to be with. I worked for Mary many years at the Department of Transportation, where I was the assistant secretary and an acting undersecretary. And then when Mary moved on to greener pastures, I went to different things and management consulting and spent a career running different companies and now run a technology company based out of D.C. Mary, on the other hand, has had every single job in transportation. You can read her bio, but she ran the U.S. Department of Transportation, ran the Federal Highway Administration, ran the Arizona Department of Transportation, had multiple other jobs in Arizona DOT, and has obviously consulted in and around transportation and been on a number of corporate boards related to it. So I think we have the best guests. I don't know who else is doing these podcasts, but I think we have the best guests. So why don't we just jump in, Mary? Kind of rewinding the clock a little bit to the time when you were running the department. You laid out, a pretty comprehensive vision to overhaul kind of how we pay for transportation in the United States. Love to just hear a little bit about what motivated you to push that agenda and then give the country a grade on how we've lived up to your vision.
Well, I think what really precipitated that, Tyler, was first my experience here in Arizona DOT and seeing that the revenue base that we had depended on for so many years was going to be declining and wasn't going to be there, the gas tax, to support our nation's transportation needs or our state's transportation needs into the future. So then having gone to Washington, following my experience here in Arizona, that just really hit home with me that we had to think of a better way to pay for transportation. The gas tax, when it was first initiated, was a pretty good proxy for need in the nation. But that has been 60, 70 years ago now. We've got to kind of come up with a way that will support our nation's transportation needs now and into the future. And I think pricing has to be a big part of that. And boy, in terms of a grade, how far we've progressed since we left there in 09, I'm going to probably say a D. This hasn't really gone the way that I had hoped it would, but it will.
Well, so let's talk about the D. So, you know, you obviously, you know, one of the fastest growing revenue sources in the country are toll roads. You've seen an explosion of interest in managed lanes with, I think, every metropolitan area in the U.S. planning a managed lane today. You've obviously seen this push by New York City to do a comprehensive pricing solution that's going to take that across the line. So when you say D, are you saying that you think that just the breadth of what's happened is not what you envisioned, or that, you know, that there are other failures that you think?
Well, maybe I'm too hard of a grader given what you just said. And I was very encouraged to see that Federal Highway is going to move forward with approvals on the New York City congestion management scheme right here quickly. But I think the D is more the larger sense. Certainly there have been successes with managed lanes, and I've been associated, as you have been, with some of those personally. And I think that we are seeing more and more of those types of lanes come to bear around the country. But the larger system itself, still, as I look at what Congress is considering in terms of the FAST Act successor and things like that, are really playing at the margins in terms of what we need to do overall to support transportation.
Well, whether it's a D or a B or a C, it's not an A. I think that's a safe statement. Yeah. So I guess when you look back and you think about all the elected officials that you've interacted with, both in the public and private sector, you know, federal officials, state officials, local officials, and ultimately this is in the political arena, this question of how we pay for transportation. What is it that makes it so difficult for elected officials to get their head around and be excited about the idea of reforming the way we pay?
I think it's political courage. That is the one missing ingredient. And Tyler, you and I used to talk about a failure of imagination. You know, for people to think that we just can't do anything about this or can't do anything differently, is indeed a failure of imagination. And so I think that there have been some. Rick Perry, governor of Texas during a period of time, and others like him, Mitch Daniels, have really stepped up and embraced and seen that we need to do something differently. Jeb Bush, governor of Florida as well. So we just need to convince the larger political body that what has worked in the past will not serve us in the future. And we have to look at some of these great experiments with managed lanes and toll roads and figure out a way that we can make that more mainstream and not just it's not onesies, twosies anymore. I don't mean to say that, but really much more mainstream. And looking at pricing as a whole, I mean, we're going to see in the not too distant future very few cars that are going to still be burning fossil-based fuels. And so as we see the Teslas and the others coming on board today, electric cars, how do we then pay for the roads that we're using, not just the managed lanes and the toll roads, but, you know, my neighborhood streets or you know, major arterials as well. And so I think a mileage-based user fee is the best way to go. And I think that scares politicians. Many of them, you know, say, I don't want people to know where I am or how much I'm driving. But we do need to do that. And there are absolutely ways to protect privacy.
You know, we've been saying these dire things for many years. Every year, state legislatures come together, the federal government comes together, and we increase transportation funding. You know, not as much as many interest groups want, but we always seem to find a way to increase spending. So is part of it that there's just this cliff that people talk about and this kind of language that people use to describe it is kind of almost people don't believe it anymore?
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. We're kind of a victim of our own success in that we have found ways to get by, and Congress has appropriated additional funds, but not transportation funds per se to do that. So it reminds me of a time back here in Arizona when we were talking about our maintenance budget and our ability to plow snow, and that we needed to get more money into that, or we weren't going to be able to plow snow. Well, we didn't get more money, and we still plowed the snow. We still found a way to do that. And so I think that's where we're a victim of our own success in finding ways to get by. But what really troubles me is in terms of the federal transportation funding, the trust fund is no longer so much just a trust fund because it's been supplemented so much by general fund revenues over a period of time. And as we look at the demands on the federal budget and the non-defense discretionary spending, there are so many things that are going to take that money away and so many priorities that are going to stack up above transportation that I don't see that we can continue to supplement gas tax funding or fuel tax funding with general fund revenues to the extent that we have over the past 10 years.
Yeah. So look, I mean, we're living in an era of obviously massive technology disruption, as you already noted, with electric vehicles. And you know, I'm working for a company basically focused on accelerating deployment of autonomous vehicles into infrastructure, and obviously connected vehicles have been around and increasing. So, you know, we have this kind of EV, AV, CV world now that we're living in with the industry driving that on the automotive side. Do we think this is a moment where we can almost fold funding reform into this big wave that's coming and say, look, we got to step back. The way we travel is about to fundamentally shift. We have a shock, obviously, that was awful from COVID. We have all this technology. Like, is there a better argument to say, look, now let's actually push comprehensive reform?
I do think so, Tyler. I think that's a very good point. And because it is going to change, the way we move, mobility is going to change and change dramatically. And I think people have thought of autonomous vehicles as something, you know, George Jetson future based, but it's not. Your company is proving that. It's here today. And I'm working with some others who are working on things like that as well. So I think that this could be the impetus that would help us really get people's attention and say, okay, let's figure out a way to do this and to make it work.
And I think the opportunity to integrate these technologies is pretty high, right? So we have this vehicle platform now. And as to your point, I mean, we can charge people for using this platform in different ways. And so, you know, I guess the thing you and I used to talk about was why did the public think of kind of roadway travel so differently than they thought of, you know, buying water or buying electricity? So why do they?
Because they've they've always seen it that way. It's always been that way. And that's the way that they think it's always going to be into the future. And yet, of course, it's not. I mean, we think nothing of going to an early bird movie or a theater or even a dinner or something like that to pay more or pay less. But when it comes to transportation, nobody wants to do that. But I think it is changing. People are really beginning to see transportation more as a utility, not just something that they've been taking for granted all this time, and seeing that we can do things differently.
And with the climate change imperative that's getting obviously more and more attention, I mean, you know, where transportation continues to drive, you know, depending on which country you're looking at, you know, 30 to 50% or even more of the emissions. I mean, it also seems like now's the time where the federal government is going to probably invest a lot of money. We have multiple cycles of reauthorization that hopefully, you know, could happen over the next 10 years. So, I mean, would you encourage elected officials to really be bold right now?
Absolutely. I mean, I mentioned political courage earlier, and you know, not having run for office myself, maybe that's something I shouldn't say, but I have seen that political courage really change things in the past. And too often we get focused, I think political parties get focused on the next election or what's going to happen in the near term. And so someone with that political courage could look into the future, see the changes that we need to make, and begin to make those changes. And, you know, it's we talk about surface transportation, and clearly that's important, but aviation is as well. You know, how we manage air traffic control doesn't need to be the way that it's been in the past. We can be bold and do things differently, but we've got to have the willingness and the political courage to do that.
Secretary Pete has kind of talked about his agenda of innovation. It does seem like we have a confluence now of people talking about these problems more coherently. The danger in some ways is there's so many things happening that are disruptive that, you know, pulling it all together into a coherent strategy is going to be tough. But it does seem like the moment is now. So let me pivot a little bit and talk about the private sector's role. I know this is obviously something you've also been a big champion of, and yourself have worked in the private sector to drive the reforms that you just talked about. How would you grade the private sector in their participation since you left office?
Well, I think the private sector has stepped up, and they look for opportunities. But some of the projects that you've been involved in Texas, myself, and in North Carolina and other places, I think the private sector has really stepped up. Hasn't always been easy, you know. Make no mistake, it hasn't been easy for them to do it. But I think there are companies out there that have stayed with it, kept trying in spite of the many obstacles that came in their way, and have continued to push forward with successful projects. And, you know, and you talked about the issue of people changing. When someone learns that there's going to be managed lanes or a toll road in their area, their first answer is no, we're not going to do that. And even as these projects are being designed and built, there continues to be, in many cases, some public opposition. But once they're running, that changes, and that changes dramatically. Once they're open, we're seeing customer satisfaction rates in the 80s and 90 percentile after the projects are open, and they see how well they work, particularly managed lanes that give people an option of using an express lane and paying for that, getting where they need to be, saving time. Those are things that the public really embraces. So I think the private sector has, in spite of some obstacles, stepped up and really worked hard to try to mainstream these ideas.
And you know, the complexity of public-private partnerships has obviously changed over time. I mean, you know, we've gone from looking at, you know, only very large-scale projects to, you know, different kinds of outsourcing to technology partnerships. So it does seem to me that the private sector has itself, you know, evolved, widened, and gotten more focused.
Yes.
Nobody kind of really pays enough attention to, in my experience, the procurement side of this problem. So we talk a lot about interacting with elected officials and the DOT secretaries. But, you know, in your experience, how do we break through the difficulties of transacting with government at a procurement level?
Now, I think that is such a good point. We continue to use contracting methods and procurement methods that are in the past or the way we procured services in the past, whether it's a design, bid, build, construction project or something else. And we do have to think more in the technology realm of what we're trying to procure today, not necessarily the concrete, asphalt, and steel, as one of our predecessors has said, but that we're buying technology and using technology. And so we have to really, I think, use that model for procuring services as opposed to the old construction design maintenance model.
And look, I mean, I think, most states take kind of a project by project approach. And, I think one of the areas where the federal government, believe it or not, has actually been a leader is really around, either blanket purchase contracts or indefinite quantities contracts. Do we think states could be using these tools where they do broad-based platforms to encourage technology and other innovation?
Absolutely. And I do think, someone said to me one time, you've seen one public-private partnership, you've seen one public-private partnership. That's crazy. We can have more model legislation to procure services in the right way and use it on a broad-based basis instead of the onesies, twosies that we go on.
Final question is, you tell me which scenario do you think will be the future? So it's 2040. What percent of our overall revenue source in 2040 is coming from fuel taxes? Is it less than 30, 30 to 60, or more than 60?
Less than 30. Well, less than
30. There we go. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mary. It was an honor of my life to work for you. And hopefully we will have more of these podcasts in the future.
I think so. And really thanks to Eno for giving us an opportunity to talk about transportation in the future and what's going on in our arena.
Agreed. Thank you, Eno.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and find out more about our centennial celebration at 100years.enotrans.org.